content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And the cover story headline begins on the front page, North Carolina Economic Outlook, Pulling Back the Curtain. The state of North Carolina is entering the year with a budget surplus, a low unemployment rate, and a healthy economic development pipeline. And the story begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, The Post-COVID Reveal, North Carolina Economists Paint Promising Picture for State, written by Laura Brumette. Learn to adapt. That's the name of the game for business in 2022. The state of North Carolina is entering the year with a budget surplus, a low unemployment rate, and a healthy economic development pipeline. But supply chain issues, a struggling labor market, and high inflation will continue tormenting the economy in 2022. Still, economists say the state is likely to see an overall positive year. A year ago, economists were hoping an end to the pandemic was possible. Now, with the vaccine rollout long complete and another variant on the scene, the tone has shifted to highlight the necessity of adapting to the new normal. Economists across the state see a brighter year ahead, and the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina retains a robust but evolving pipeline of projects as the state hopes to capitalize on a talented workforce and low corporate tax rate. From a numbers standpoint, North Carolina is expected to fare well in 2022 with a real gross domestic product growth forecasted at 3.1% to reach $673 billion, according to John Connaughton, a professor of financial economics at UNC Charlotte. Mirroring that prediction, Cephas Nonwab, associate professor of economics at North Carolina Agricultural and Technical State University, NCA&T, is expecting growth to be around 3%. Connaughton's forecast for 2021's real GDP growth is 6.5%, a reflection of the wild swing seen quarterly last year. His forecast for 2022 at 3.4 percentage points lower than 2021 reflects a return to a steadier economy. If you look at where we are right now, both nationally and in North Carolina, we're basically where we were before all of this started, maybe a little bit ahead of it, he says. With a slightly rosier outlook, the Wells Fargo economics team is predicting state real GDP growth of 4.5% in 2022, according to a report published in December. Included in the report was the expectation that unemployment will average 3.7% this year, the same figure the Bureau of Labor Statistics reported for the state for December. To put that in perspective, the U.S. economy grew 6.6% during the fourth quarter of 2021, a recent record. Even though we haven't recovered all of the jobs that were lost during the lockdown weeks, we've more than recovered all of the losses in gross state product, says Mark Vintner, managing director and senior economist for Wells Fargo's corporate and investment bank. Most of the jobs that haven't been recovered are relatively low-paying and mainly in the leisure and hospitality industry, and therefore not affecting state output as much as sectors such as manufacturing, Vintner says. The hospitality sector, though facing the biggest challenges, stands to see the biggest gain in 2022, Connaughton says. Vintner and Connaughton predict nearly all industries will do well this year, with information and construction seeing notable growth in Connaughton's eyes. According to Vintner, most sectors will see a positive year due to pent-up demand and unmet needs in just about every area of the economy. Mike Walden, a professor of economics at NC State University, is anticipating technology and professional services expanding in 2022 due to the sectors already having surpassed pre-pandemic employment levels. Fed weighs options on inflation. The federal government has pumped close to $6 trillion into the economy since the start of the pandemic, notes Laura Ulrich, senior regional economist at the Charlotte branch of the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond, Virginia. Demand soaring at the start of 2022, caused by consumers looking to spend excess money, has been compounded with supply chain issues and labor shortages. That's an obvious recipe for higher prices in 2022, Ulrich says. For the 12 months ending in December, the consumer price index for all items rose to 7%, according to the BLS. The 12-month increase was the largest the U.S. has seen since June 1982. That's the price the U.S. is paying for the cautionary measures taken by the federal government, Walden says. Even if the supply chain was in perfect shape this year, there still wouldn't be enough supply to match demand, he says. I think 2022 is going to be a year where we begin to face the downsides of what we did in the previous 2 years in terms of saving us from the pandemic, Walden says. 2022 is the year we're going to have to pay the piper. He says, on January 26th, the Federal Reserve noted that it will soon be appropriate to raise the target range for the federal funds rate. The committee decided to continue to reduce the monthly pace of its net asset purchases, bringing them to an end in early March. Vintner is expecting the Federal Reserve to have a tricky time keeping the U.S. on the path for a soft landing while lowering inflation. Interest rates are likely to be raised three times in 2022. He notes that inflation could turn out to be more persistent and more pernicious than expected. If so, he says, then the Fed may have to accelerate the speed at which they raise interest rates and increase the magnitude of the raise. That would create some risk to the economy. The rush of investing in single-family homes and commercial real estate will slow significantly if interest rates rise faster than what is currently projected, Vintner says. While property prices may not lower, he expects the momentum of investing to fall. If inflation remains at elevated levels in 2022, it could affect consumer sentiment, Nanwab says. When the public feels inflation is out of control, consumer confidence is dampened and people might start to spend in a way that fuels inflation more, he said. Drastic actions taken by the Federal Reserve if inflation does not slow will likely lead to a recession, Nanwab warns. Stephanie Roth, senior markets economist at J.P. Morgan Private Bank, expects inflation to slow dramatically in 2022. At the end of the year, she predicts inflation to be at about 2.2%. Roth is looking for inflation to be healthy but still cool quite a bit from where it sits today. The big shortages. The supply and labor shortages that plagued the end of 2021 are not resolving anytime soon, according to economists. Supply chain disruptions are affecting most sectors, causing uncertainty in businesses from construction companies to restaurants. The already depleted labor force has been hit even harder by the appearance of the Omicron variant, with a heavy impact on the hospitality industry. Lori Leachman, professor of economics at Duke University, doesn't see the supply chain issues being corrected in the near future. There are real manufacturing issues, she says, and there are real shipping and transportation issues that cannot be addressed with a short-term change in policy or tweaking of the system. Craig Carlock, owner and CEO of Greensboro-based Omega Sports, is expecting his supply chain to be extremely disrupted in the first half of this year. The sports store, with locations in Raleigh, Charlotte, the Triad, and Wilmington, will face less product availability than the company and customers would like, he says. When looking for solutions to supply chain issues in 2022, reshoring is often a part of the conversation. North Carolina's infrastructure, proximity to ports, and the manufacturing-related labor pool could draw reshoring efforts to the state, Leachman says. While reshoring is a hot topic, Ulrich isn't expecting much of the effort to actually occur. Instead, a bigger emphasis on holding inventory is likely on the way, she says. The just-in-time inventory system has burned a lot of companies through this period of time, Ulrich says. I think that's partially why you see industries like warehousing so strong right now, because companies are making longer-term plans to keep more inventory on hand. The increased need could give North Carolina the opportunity to become a warehousing hub. The state's ability to distribute products across the U.S. and receive products from nearby ports could bring more warehouses and related jobs, she says. For existing jobs, employers will have to figure out how to creatively pay more, Carlock says. Employers, especially in retail and hospitality, need to increase compensation. But that doesn't mean simply increasing wages, he says. Offering a better work and home-life balance, implementing bonus programs, fair management systems, and making employees feel valued are potential ways to keep staff in 2022, Carlock says. In 2021, the combination of stimulus checks, unemployment benefits, and tax credits were a factor in keeping people out of the workforce, Roth says. With more federal stimulus unlikely to happen in 2022, some labor supply should come back online, though the shortage of lower-end workers could be lessened. The labor market will remain tight, she says. A shortage is also persisting at the other end of the labor market, Leachman says. Early retirements are becoming increasingly common due to pandemic-related risk factors and virtual work fatigue, she says. Wells Fargo's Vintner suspects that many of the early retirees won't be returning to the workforce, and those that do will likely be on a part-time basis. Strong project pipeline. North Carolina ended 2021 with a strong track record of both job and investment announcements, says Christopher Chung, CEO of the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina. Going into 2022, the partnership is carrying over a full pipeline of potential deals for the state and is confident that the activity level will remain high, he says. This year is starting off with around 200 recruitment and expansion deals actively considering North Carolina, compared to about 160 projects in the pipeline at the beginning of 2021. One of the more recent projects came in late January with the announcement of Denver-based Boom Technologies Incorporated's 1,761-job supersonic plane plant outside Greensboro. Last year saw an increase in announcements, including Apple's 3,000-job campus in Research Triangle Park and Toyota's $1.29 billion project in Randolph County. Not only are more companies considering North Carolina, but the size of the projects has also grown across job creation and capital investment, Chung says. With more potential deals to court and projects increasing in size, the state is in a better position than last year. If we close even the same proportion of deals that were in the pipeline at the beginning of the year, then we will likely do better than 2021, he says. While office projects are slowing down, industrial, manufacturing, and distribution projects will be strong in 2022, Chung says, as 95% of the projects currently in the works fall under those categories. In 2022, the EDPNC will be putting an emphasis on landing companies with electric vehicle or EV battery projects, he adds. 6 months ago, we commissioned a supply chain study looking at the EV battery industry to say, okay, here's where North Carolina is better positioned in each one of those points along the value chain, Chung says. What that's going to do is suggest types of companies that we may have more traction with if we were to approach them proactively. Ernie Pearson, managing partner at Sanford Holhauser Economic Development Consulting, expects the recent announcement A recently announced Toyota battery manufacturing project to draw necessary suppliers and vendors to Randolph County in 2022. Pearson, a former Assistant Secretary of Economic Development for North Carolina, is eyeing the supply chain issues relating to microchips. If disruptions persist, related projects could land in North Carolina, he says. When choosing sites, companies look at available labor first, Pearson says. Though labor is currently a problem across the U.S., the Triangle's output of skilled labor from its universities could be a plus for companies looking to land in North Carolina. The corporate income tax phase-out plan included in the state budget also makes the business environment in the state more attractive, he says. The state corporate tax rate is currently 2.5% and will continue to drop until reaching zero in 2030. Roth, the J.P. Morgan economist, is anticipating that the promise of lowering the corporate tax rate will spur even more in-migration to the state this year. North Carolina has experienced an influx of new residents coming from states like New York and California during the pandemic, seeking better weather or a lower cost of living. At the margin, moves like this should benefit the movement of businesses and individuals to those states, she says. There's been a pretty clear correlation between the tax rate of the state people have left and the state that people have moved to. From July 1, 2020 to July 1, 2021, North Carolina added nearly 94,000 residents, according to recent U.S. Census Bureau data. That amount ranked the fourth largest figure in the country in raw numbers. Ulrich has been following the trend of people moving from large metros to mid-sized metros, such as Charlotte and Raleigh. The medium-sized cities are still able to offer amenities that companies need while alleviating issues associated with highly populated cities, she says. That migration is part of the reason that North Carolina is only down 1.5% in jobs in comparison to February 2020, while the U.S. is still down 2.6%, Ulrich says. But how those jobs return and in what form is still evolving. As Chung points out, the continuing pandemic doesn't affect whether companies will choose to invest or expand in 2022 due to their expectation that the world will eventually reach some kind of normal. But the investments are being done in a way of adapting to the new reality, Chung says. For instance, the number of office projects is decreasing, with most companies operating on either a hybrid or fully remote model. The bottom line for companies when thinking about a traditional headquarters office is this kind of uncertainty about what the future of the workplace looks like, he says. That's probably going to give some pause to moving ahead with uprooting a current headquarters and planning it somewhere else. And now we turn to the continuing series, 52 Shades of Success. And the headline on this one is A Nuclear Engineer's Journey: How Samudra Vijay's firm is leveraging technology to address an array of complexities. Story by Connie Gentry. About this project, the 52-week project showcases accomplishments, challenges, and opportunities of individuals and businesses run by people of color, women, immigrants, veterans, representatives from the LGBTQ plus community, and a few other groups forwarding the mission of diversity, equity, and inclusion in the greater Raleigh-Durham metro area. The project will also delve into important trends and issues relating to DEI. Samudra Vijay is a problem solver. Running a $2.5 million business is the byproduct of a career spent developing solutions to make organizations and businesses run more effectively, efficiently, and securely. When he launched SAM IT Solutions in 2009, it was largely in response to the needs in the healthcare industry. And while healthcare remains one of the company's primary verticals, they have diversified into life sciences, pharma, manufacturing, industrial automation, and more, including work for law firms, restaurants, and retail. The range of projects and scope of work continues to evolve and expand, yielding annual growth of 15 to 20%. 3 years ago, we became a distributor for Siemens Industrial Automation Controls, which was a big moment for us because that allows us to do more of the cool things we are known for, like solving the problems that other people have not, says Vijay, president and CEO of SAM IT. He cites a recent project with the town of Morrisville as one of those fun opportunities he relishes. The project was part of Morrisville's Smart City Initiative and was an idea conceived by the municipality to address inefficiencies that resulted from flooding issues at its Cedar Fork Park. Because that park is located in a floodplain, even moderate rain events can result in sports fields being closed. Determining when fields should open or close was a time-consuming manual process that required city workers to drive to the park to make assessments. It was also problematic for residents who would frequently travel to the park for sporting events or practices, only to find the fields were closed. Enter Vijay and his penchant for solving problems, who leveraged his IT expertise and Siemens devices to come up with the perfect solution. Moisture-detecting sensors were placed in the ground at the park, which fed data back to the Siemens controller. All the data is transferred to the cloud, and based on the moisture data, it determines whether a field should be open or closed and then sends a signal to the Siemens controller. Park officials simply log in from their phone or laptop to open or close the barrier gate in the park remotely, he says. Along with that, we created a display, which is like a traffic light, and families can go to the town's dashboard or sign up for alerts to see if a field is marked green, open, or red, closed. The next step will be to automate the process entirely so the gates are automatically opened or closed and the digital messaging is updated automatically in response to the moisture readings. Rick Ralph, Chief Information Officer for the town of Morrisville, said the project, which was completed in 2021, has yielded benefits in more ways than they had anticipated. We didn't think about the carbon impact this could have. Anytime crews or residents have to drive unnecessarily, they are increasing the carbon impact and the traffic congestion in the community, he says. By avoiding unnecessary trips, we've reduced carbon emissions and congestion. It's hard to put a dollar figure on the benefits, but Ralph estimates roughly a reduction of 1 metric ton of carbon emissions a year, but he also counts the lifestyle improvements for residents as a win. Limiting aggravations for our residents and reducing the environmental impacts are real, and that's how we're measuring success, he says. We envisioned this concept, but SAM IT brought it to life. They didn't just bring their technical expertise. They care about the town and the residents, and they want to do meaningful projects. It harkens back to the early days of Vijay's career. Although he began as a professor of mechanical engineering in India, he came to the U.S. in 1999, earning a doctorate in engineering systems from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Mostly I worked in environmental fields, and my thesis advisor was a Nobel laureate, says Vijay. That MIT professor, Mario Molina, was awarded the 1995 Nobel Prize in Chemistry for his work in atmospheric chemistry. Vijay worked as a research fellow at the EPA doing mathematical modeling, which he continued as a full-time job even after moving to the Triangle in 2005 with his wife, Dr. Lalita Sidana, began working for Doctors Making House Calls. The back of her car was filled with paper charts from when she was going to see patients, and then she'd get faxes at home and have to fax signed prescriptions. It was time-consuming, inefficient, and she had to wait until she came home to do much of the work, says Vijay, who began looking for technical solutions to solve the problem. That was the original precursor to SAM IT, and then as their friends across the healthcare industry asked for his help, it became apparent a need existed in the marketplace. It blossomed in 2007, before the days of electronic charts, when a friend who was setting up his pediatric practice asked Vijay to help build an IT infrastructure. I said, I'm a mechanical engineer with a master's in nuclear engineering and a PhD in energy systems and engineering systems. I don't know enough to do this, but he thought I was smart enough to figure it out, so he flew me out to Cincinnati. Those anecdotal incidents gave VJ the anchor and customer base he needed to grow his business, and his commitment to growth applies equally to his customers. He's been working with Patagonia Health, a cloud and apps-based electronic health record, or EHR, software company almost since its inception in 2009. As they grew, we grew, and it is a very synergistic relationship, VJ says. Asuk Mathur, founder and CEO of Patagonia Health, echoes that sentiment, noting, "More than an IT vendor, Sumutra is an excellent partner to brainstorm solutions which meet our specific needs." In addition to its Durham headquarters, SAMIT also has a fully owned business entity in India, which, like the U.S. operations, employs 15 people. The goal was to have a company that could provide 24/7 support, which the dual locations are able to do. "We considered going back to India to work, but it's easier to do business in the U.S. than in India. The rules and regulations here are easier. Business owners here don't know what complexity is," VJ says with a laugh. What he isn't smiling about is the growing threat of cyber attacks. "We were just dealing with a ransomware attack last week at one of our clients' law firm, and we're seeing maybe 3 or 4 a month," he says. There is also opportunity to grow business across municipalities, like the work done for Mooresville, which is already looking at expanding the Smart Parks platform to 2 other parks in the city's portfolio. And in the 52 Shades of Success section, we also have 3 news articles. 5 HBCUs awarded $2 million plus. The PNC Foundation established its North Carolina HBCU initiative, funded with more than $2 million. The goal is to support entrepreneurship and create workforce opportunities for students at 5 HBCUs in the state: Elizabeth City State University, Fayetteville State University, Johnson C. Smith University, NC Central University, and Winston-Salem State University. Grants will be distributed over a 3-year period to fund new programs and enhance the school's offerings of capacity-building opportunities and technology enhancements. Students from these schools will also have the opportunity to participate in the PNC Pitch Competition, an annual forum where student entrepreneurs can showcase innovative ideas. North Carolina Black Business Expo. The Western North Carolina Minority Business Association expects more than 1,000 attendees at the inaugural Black Business Expo, April 8 through 10 in Asheville. Designed to be a trade show, networking, and educational event for minority-owned businesses, the event will feature nationally recognized speakers including Adrian Miller, Robin Hatcher, Precious Williams, and Kia Hamilton. For more information, visit WNCBlackExpo.com. And finally, Black Carolinians Speak. A new initiative is underway to commemorate the COVID-19 pandemic experiences of African Americans in the Carolinas. Black Carolinians Speak, Portraits of a Pandemic, is a collaborative project of the North Carolina African American Heritage Commission and the State Archives of North Carolina, both divisions within the North Carolina Department of Natural and Cultural Resources, and the WGOJA Foundation, a mission of the South Carolina African American Heritage Commission. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Waterfront in Raleigh. Raleigh is one of the few major American cities not located on water, thanks Joel Lane. But a creative plan for the rising North Hills Innovation District will incorporate water into the concept. The Big Branch Creek runs through the area where the district will rise, and the Callison RTKL firm has mapped out a plan for the office towers, apartments, and retail space to blend into the natural setting for a more walkabout concept. "We wanted to create a place that was designed with the natural features rather than design around them," says Eric Doer, a senior associate vice president out of Callison RTKL's Chicago office. In a city that lacks waterways, it's a promising development and comes as the massive Midtown Exchange project, which is essentially adjacent to the Innovation District, will also incorporate water into its design. The 33-acre Innovation District will include 300,000 square feet of office space, 200 hotel rooms, 250 high-rise residences, 330 new mid-rise residences, and a refreshing walk down the creek. "The resulting master plan focuses on the creek as a unifying element rather than a barrier," Doer says. "Buildings and outdoor spaces are organized to embrace the creek, celebrate its natural beauty, and provide opportunities to interact directly with the natural features of the site." New Llama joins Southern Pines Golf Club. A baby llama has joined the group of renowned llamas at the Talamore Golf Resort in Southern Pines. Before Christmas, a 35-pound baby llama named Jones for golf course architect Reese Jones, who designed Talamore, was born. The llamas, there are now four, used to serve as caddies, but still wander out to visit golfers from time to time. Notaries are hot jobs in searches. If you're thinking about becoming a notary, you're not alone. Google dove into its search trends to see what job seekers were doing from January 2021 to January 2022. And in the Triangle market, how to become a notary topped the list. That was followed by searches for 2, personal trainer, 3, detective, 4, real estate agent, and 5, content creator. Across the board, Google found the top searches were for 1, real estate agent, 2, flight attendant, 3, notary, 4, therapist, and 5, pilot. And if you do want to become a notary, the North Carolina Secretary of State's office can tell you all about it. Universities target new courses in AI. Undergraduates at Duke University and NC State University could have new options for courses on artificial intelligence during the 2023-24 academic year. The National Humanities Center, a nonprofit based in the Triangle, is partnering with the two schools and 13 others to create courses on artificial intelligence technologies. This effort is being supported by a gift from Google, the center says. Through the initiative, the faculty from the universities will gather at the center in June to discuss emerging AI technologies and the best ways to help students engage with those ideas. The participants will then develop course descriptions, learning goals, and syllabi for courses that focus on developing responsible AI for undergraduates to take during the year that starts in fall 2023. Faculty members will again meet at the center in the spring or summer of 2024 to assess the courses and make recommendations for wider dissemination and future phases of the initiative that could involve additional institutions in the U.S. and elsewhere. Real estate leader to help other vets. A Navy veteran rising up the ranks in real estate has been named to the Presidential Leadership Scholars Program and wants to use the experience to help others connected with the military find jobs in real estate. Michael Burris, the area operations manager for Cortland, was one of 60 people selected for the program. Cortland was founded in Atlanta in 2005 and owns and manages apartments across the country. His goal is to use what he learns to help military spouses and veterans get launched in the multifamily property management business. This will offer an extremely underserved population access to a career and skill set that is in demand and available in every military market throughout the country, Burris tells Biz. Furthermore, the experience gained in property management opens doors to other career opportunities within and outside of the real estate industry. Burris, who earned his undergraduate degree at the Citadel and an MBA at UNC Chapel Hill, calls the effort an act of service to those who have sacrificed so much for our country. And finally, what it takes to feel like a millionaire. A new survey defines millionaire status in North Carolina, and the answer might surprise you. Online gambling site Solitaire.com asked its readers what it meant to be a millionaire. And in North Carolina, survey respondents said they would need to own nearly $5.3 million worth of assets in order to achieve millionaire financial status in their own eyes. While it's less than the national average of nearly $5.5 million, it's still more than $1 million. In California, people say they'd need even more, however, nearly $6.3 million, to feel like a millionaire. And now we turn to the On Transportation and Tech page, written by Lauren Onasorge. Low-cost carrier merger, a new frontier for RDU. How Frontier's planned Spirit buy impacts the Triangle. A proposed combination of two of Raleigh-Durham International Airport's low-cost carriers could be good news for flyers in the Triangle. Denver, Colorado-based Frontier Airlines' planned buy of Florida-based Spirit Airlines for nearly $2.9 billion is still months away from closing. Brett Snyder, president of airline industry blog Cranky Flyer, says much is up in the air, including the deal's impact to mid-sized markets such as RDU, where both carriers had lofty ambitions before the pandemic disrupted the airline industry. It's hard to know exactly how this might come out, but it's unlikely to be bad, he says. This is not a merger that's about shrinking and consolidating. The idea would be growth and a better presence in all of its locations. While Frontier and Spirit have a lot of similarities, they're both ultra-low-cost and primarily focused on leisure. There are differences. Frontier, Snyder notes, tends to service airports with weekly routes, while Spirit focuses on routes with more frequency. And with a lot yet to be decided, it's hard to predict what the resulting airline, projected to be the fifth largest in the country, will look like. Mike Walden, an economist and professor emeritus at NC State University, says becoming a stronger airline could be very important in the high-stakes, high-risk airline industry. There may be some reorganization, but I wouldn't expect dramatic change due to the region's spectacular growth, he says. Spirit is a relatively new entrant at RDU, having launched aggressively with seven destinations back in 2019. Spirit ended 2021 with 72,846 in plane passengers at RDU. Frontier ended the year with 251,255 in plane passengers at RDU. Triangle startup funding in 2022 so far. Triangle Area Startups reported raising a combined $29.1 million in the month of January, according to filings with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. It's a similar amount to the same period a year ago, when the same sweep of January filings showed just over $30 million raised. But there's a big difference. The data show bigger raises in 2022 so far. For the first month of 2022, 13 firms reported raises to the SEC, the largest being $12.1 million by Curie Company. A year ago, it was 20 firms led by edge computing firm EDJX, which raised $10.3 million in debts and warrants. French chemical manufacturer picks Kerry for a new R&D operation. French chemical firm Arkema is expanding its Kerry operation by opening a new research and development lab focused on powder resins alongside its existing testing facility. Financial details were not released, but Arkema calls it a significant investment. Executives say the move was prompted by high growth. Powder is growing because it has a very good sustainability story, says Michael Iwani, global business manager of powder resins. Google beefs up hiring for Durham Cloud Hub. More than 10 months after announcing plans to bring an engineering hub to Durham, Google has opened its initial office and hiring is starting to accelerate. The company currently has 67 open jobs listed in the Bull City, 56 of which are in engineering, according to the California-based tech giant's career site. A Google spokesman declines to be specific about the current headcount in Durham. The company, when announcing the Durham hub, said it could eventually employ more than 1,000 workers. Google's goal was to hire 100 people in 2021, according to a memo recently released by Governor Roy Cooper's office via a public records request. The Google spokesman would not confirm that figure, but it says the company has exceeded its goal. Google, unlike most other big Triangle projects announced in 2021, did not pursue state incentives, meaning it will not be held to task when it comes to job creation pledges. The hub, which opened at 200 West Morris Street in the Durham Innovation District last month, was announced in March 2021. And finally, in a section called He Said It, a quote from Governor Roy Cooper, addressing a group of wind energy advocates, experts, and officials in Wilmington recently as the North Carolina Task Force for Offshore Wind Economic Resource Strategies met for the first time. Guys, this is where it happens. Companies are coming here because they know we are on the cutting edge of the clean energy economy. And now we turn to the On Greater Triangle Growth page, written by Evan Hooper. New owner weighs options after buy. California buyer could add homes after $1.2 million deal. The new owner of a Johnston County residential community is considering different options for a piece of land she recently purchased. Stephanie Chow purchased Sundance Country Club Ranch for more than $1.2 million, according to a deed filed January 7. The property sits at 299 Brogdon School Road, about 10 miles southeast of downtown Smithfield. Sundance is home to a small 12-unit residential rental community. Chow, who lives in California, says she targeted the property located near the Neuse River not because Johnston County is the fastest-growing county in North Carolina, but for its natural beauty. The community sits on nearly 20 acres of land with a pond and horse farm on the property. Chow is familiar with the Triangle as she used to work with IBM and traveled a few times to Big Blue's site and Research Triangle Park. She says she could envision retiring in North Carolina. Chow says it is a big chunk of land, about 18 acres, so she is considering adding more housing on the property. We did talk about possibly putting in some kind of a tiny home village, she says. That's just conceptual. That's just one thing. Maybe it's a dream for me. Maybe someday we can make it into some sort of self-sufficient tiny home village. But I'm not saying that's exactly what would happen, though. Chow says the goal is to preserve some of the pastures so the village wouldn't be large. She says she met with county officials who told her the minimum lot size she could do would be 0.68 acres, and she estimated the village could be around 10 houses if she opted for that route. But it depends, Chow adds. A lot more thought needs to be put into it. Shopping center sold to Charlotte Group. A shopping center in Sanford has traded hands for over $23 million. The seller is New York-based Opus North Real Estate, an LLC addressed to Charlotte-based Colette Capital, purchased more than 23 acres on South Horner Boulevard, according to a deed filed January 24. On the land are several major retailers. Colette Capital is a real estate private equity firm with more than $350 million in assets under management and has acquired over 2.5 million square feet since 2016. The company has properties across the Southeast as well as places such as Colorado, Oklahoma, and Delaware, too, according to its website. The company did not respond to a request for comment about its Sanford purchase. D.R. Horton targets Carthage. The nation's largest home builder recently snapped up dozens of lots in Moore County. D.R. Horton purchased 54 lots in Carthage for nearly $2.2 million, according to a deed filed January 24. The land sits along U.S. Highway 15501 near where it intersects Vass Carthage Road. It's unclear exactly what the home builder, based in the Dallas suburb of Arlington, Texas, has in store for the land, as the company did not respond to multiple requests for comment, but the land does sit adjacent to another D.R. Horton community, Carriage Place, and the deed said the purchase is for Carriage Place Townhomes Phase 1. Carthage is a small town of roughly 2,500 people, about 20 minutes north of the populous area of Pinehurst, Southern Pines, and Aberdeen in Moore County. And in a section called They Said It, spokesperson for Roots Management Group on the Dallas, Texas company's purchase of 13 communities across the Greater Triangle that contain about 1,000 manufactured homes. The communities are generally in severe disrepair, and Roots looks forward to investing over $30 million to add almost 300 homes and make capital improvements, including upgrading roads. And finally, a big number, 250. The number of new homes that could be built on a 117.7-acre tract about 10 minutes north of downtown Fayetteville. The land sits along U.S. Route 401. And now we turn to the On Healthcare and Higher Education page written by Zach Ezone. The first headline, Firm Raises Cash to Fight Lung Cancer. BioFidelity opens USHQ, adds $23 million ahead of commercial launch. A cancer diagnostics company that opened its U.S. headquarters in Mooresville in July has completed a $23 million raise ahead of the commercial launch of its first product. BioFidelity develops oncology diagnostics that aim to accelerate the detection of genomic biomarkers and help physicians put patients on targeted treatments sooner. It plans to launch its first commercial diagnostic assay called Aspray Lung for lung cancer by the end of the first quarter, Chief Commercial Officer Steve Miller says. This is exactly what the physician needs to make a quick determination on how to best treat that patient, he says. Miller, based in Boston, made up the company's sole U.S. presence prior to BioFidelity opening its cancer diagnostic laboratory in Mooresville. The British company crossed the Atlantic to gain easier access to the U.S. healthcare market. It zeroed in on the research triangle for the access to workforce talent, other healthcare companies, universities, and an airport. The latter was an important factor as it allows the company to receive samples to test from physicians relatively quickly and easily. The company has 6 people working in Mooresville and 10 in the U.S. By the end of the year, it plans to increase these numbers to 15 and 28, respectively, and have a global headcount of 70. The $23 million it recently raised in a round that featured venture capital firms from Europe and Japan will support this rollout of commercial operations, Miller says, and its local headquarters will play a key role. The company's UK lab will focus on research and development before sending a product to the Triangle site, where the remaining work will be completed. After that, the product will be tested on human blood and tissue samples. The advantage of its assays, Miller says, is they identify biomarkers that can help physicians determine if their patients are candidates for targeted therapy faster than the current process. Typically, this process is done through next-generation sequencing, which can take a few weeks. Durham firm Emit Bio targets light treatment on Omicron. A Durham biotechnology company says its light-based platform has shown to be effective against the COVID-19 Omicron variant in a series of laboratory experiments. Emit Bio announced February 1 that its blue light technology eliminated 99.99% of the Omicron variant in live virus samples in lab tests. This is in line with previous findings from experiments on other variants, CEO David Emerson says. What continues to be impressive is that this treatment we found has been equally effective, no loss in potency against any of the variants, he says. This blue light treatment option provides the only treatment that is variant agnostic for coronavirus. Emit Bio, a subsidiary of research company KnowBio, began developing its handheld device to treat COVID-19 2 years ago. It works by directing precise wavelengths of visible blue light to the back of a patient's throat and surrounding tissues to kill the virus and trigger an immune response. The treatment targets the oropharynx, which is where a respiratory disease replicates after entering through a person's mouth or nose. The device has shown to be effective in one clinical trial and is undergoing another. Emit Bio completed a human clinical trial of about 30 participants in 2021, which showed the device accelerated the time to symptom resolution and reduced the viral load of SARS-CoV-2 in adults. Chimeric secures credit in advance. A Durham biopharmaceutical company has secured a $50 million credit facility to prepare for a potential contract with a federal agency. The 4-year loan agreement that Chimerix reached January 31 with Silicon Valley Bank gives the company a non-dilutive source of capital that can support future working capital needs ahead of potentially entering into a contract with the Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority, or BARDA, for a smallpox treatment, according to a securities filing. And in a section called He Said It, the quote is from Mark Velleca on becoming the new CEO of the gene therapy firm Stride Bio. He was CEO of G1 Therapeutics from 2014 to 2020, when the firm raised more than $108 million in its initial public offering. I look forward to working with the entire Stride team as we leverage our novel capsid technology and state-of-the-art manufacturing capabilities to advance our therapeutics candidates into the clinic. And finally, a big number, $70 million. That's how much West Pharmaceutical Services is investing in an expansion in Kinston that will increase the company's production capacity, warehouse, and distribution space. And now we turn to the On Real Estate page written by Caleb Harshberger. Venable Center opens in downtown Durham, Durham's newest downtown office tower now complete. After years of work, the first of two new buildings at Durham's Venable Center is open for business and on the hunt for tenants. Developers Trinity Capital Advisors and SLI Capital have completed work on the Roxborough at Venable Center, an 8-story office and life sciences building featuring 202,000 square feet of space next to a collection of existing historical structures on the campus. The project is situated at 302 East Pettigrew Street, east of the Durham Bulls Athletic Park. Opening the Roxborough energizes the existing locations at the Venable Center and sets the tone for what is to come, says Jeff Sheehan, managing partner at Trinity Capital Advisors. The building offers a variety of modern workspaces built to easily accommodate life science companies, along with universal features designed to protect the health and wellness of our tenants. The Roxborough has all the innovation and finishes of a new development. However, it is at home among its historic neighbors and situated perfectly to enjoy downtown Durham. The building was built entirely on spec and has yet to announce any tenants signed on for space. Space in the building can be built out for both lab and life sciences users, as well as traditional office tenants. The campus includes a collection of revitalized historical buildings once used for tobacco curing and storage. Sheehan says the developers took care to design a project they thought would mesh well with those structures. The goal here was don't screw it up. Don't screw up the historic nature and make the new work with the old, Sheehan says. These were buildings used for curing tobacco, and now we have cutting-edge research companies curing cancer. Durham architect Duda Payne Architects designed the building. A partnership between Wheelock Street Capital, Trinity Capital, and SLI Capital bought the 3.8-acre campus in 2018 for $27.25 million and acquired a neighboring parking lot a month later for $3.85 million. Wheelock Street Capital exited the development in 2020 as part of a recapitalization of the project. Across the street from the Roxborough at Venable, the developers are partnering with Raleigh-based Kane Realty Corporation for the construction of the 221-unit Venable Durham Apartments. Raleigh looks to streamline ADU process. This year, the City of Raleigh is launching the Fast Track Accessory Dwelling Unit Program, targeting one of the biggest barriers to assessing accessory dwelling unit construction, costs. Through this new initiative, architects and designers can submit ADU designs to the city, and the city will choose 10 designs to be used as essentially pre-approved options. Residents interested in building on ADU could pick from a collection of designs on a city-run website, costing just a licensing fee set by the designer. City of Raleigh urban designer Charles Dillard says the licensing fees often run around $1,000. He said custom designs typically run around $10,000 to $15,000 depending on the project. The potential cost savings could be significant as material and labor shortages have both sent construction costs soaring since the start of the pandemic. Sports fields to be transformed. SunCap Property Group of Charlotte filed plans for Midway West in January, calling for approximately 120,000 square feet of industrial space across a three-story building. The property totals 21 acres at 8924 Midway West Road in Raleigh. It's off Westgate Road, just inside the Interstate 540 loop on the northwest side of the city, and it's just minutes from Raleigh-Durham International Airport. The site currently hosts Mac Sports and Entertainment and is known as the Mac. It has four lighted fields used for soccer, rugby, lacrosse, and other sports. Tri-Sport Social Club uses the site for its leagues. According to filings with the city, the proposed project includes the demolition of existing sports fields and construction of an industrial building and associated facilities and infrastructure. Cary Developer plots homes in Wendell. The CSC Group, based in Cary, has filed plans for a project called Martin Pond Road, calling for 227 homes with a mix of single-family, detached homes, and townhomes in Wendell. The project is situated on 71 acres at the corner of Hidden Pond and Martin Pond Roads and is between Wendell Falls and downtown Wendell. And finally, we have a big number, $53.9 million. The amount paid in December by an LLC address to San Francisco-based GI Partners for Regency Woods 2, featuring 150,000 square feet of Class A office space on the south side of Cary. And now we turn to the On Retail and Restaurants page, written by Laura Bramette. Pleasant Valley looks to add apartments. Raleigh Shopping Center on Glenwood Avenue faces a refresh. A shopping center on Glenwood Avenue in Raleigh could be getting new apartments to go with its more than 360,000 square feet of retail space. The Pleasant Valley Promenade Retail Center, located at 6204 and 6250 Glenwood Avenue near Millbrook Road, could join the growing trend of shopping centers redeveloped into mixed-use projects with multifamily units. Owned by New York-based real estate investment trust Kimco Realty, the center could soon be rezoned to allow for up to five stories of commercial mixed-use development. We're always looking at the health of our shopping center, says Gregory Reed, vice president of development at Kimco. One of the key things in shopping centers nowadays, not surprisingly, is bringing on a multifamily component. A neighborhood meeting was held recently to discuss the possible rezoning. Worth Mills of Longleaf Law Partners represented the owner. Included in the potential rezoning are two properties that make up the shopping center and two adjacent properties currently holding parking lots located at 4001 and 3917 Pleasant Valley Road. The properties are currently zoned for up to three stories of commercial mixed-use development and total nearly 36 acres, according to documents regarding the proposed rezoning. During the meeting, concerns were raised about stormwater and traffic issues, both of which will be addressed further along in the process, Reed says. Bringing in apartments is part of Kimco's long-term plan for the center, Reed says, though no official site plans have been made yet. The real estate company is one of the largest owners of open-air shopping centers in the country. It bought the Pleasant Valley Promenade Center in 1993, according to Wake County Property Records. The shopping center's buildings were built in 1987 and partially remodeled in 2018, records show. Kimco is not planning to tear down the existing buildings, but would instead add apartment buildings to the site, Reed says. Together, the properties have an assessed value of $37.49 million based on property records. The center features retailers such as a combination Dick's Sporting Goods and Golf Galaxy Store, Starbucks, Ashley Home Store, and Marshall's. North Carolina Coffee Company expanding in Triangle. A Davidson coffee roaster and retailer is in the middle of a significant expansion into southeastern markets, and the Triangle is targeted for 5 locations. Summit Coffee, started in 1998, has 2 locations currently open in Davidson, Asheville, and Charlotte, one in the Lake Norman area with 6 more under construction. Following a $1 million capital raise in 2020, the company is now aiming to expand with multiple locations in Charlotte, Asheville, Atlanta, and the Triangle. The Triangle will have at least 5 franchise stores by 2025, the company says. Summit had a Chapel Hill location from October 2020 to October 2021. The space at 140 West Franklin Street was left sitting vacant in 2020. CEO Brian Helfrich signed an agreement with the property manager to pay 40% of the normal rent in exchange for filling the space for 1 year. Though the cafe was successful, Franklin Street doesn't draw the brand's target demographic, Helfrich says. Umstead Hotel again ranked best in North Carolina. The annual U.S. News & World Report list, released February 8, ranks luxury hotels across the country based on the opinions of travel experts and customers. For the second year in a row, the Umstead Hotel & Spa in Cary took the top spot in North Carolina and ranked 126th in the country among more than 6,100 hotels included in the ranking. Coming in third was the Farrington House in Pittsburgh. North Carolina had 131 hotels included in the report, with the Old Edwards Inn & Spa located in Highlands taking second. And in a section called She Said It, a quote from Roxanne Lundy, storefront manager at Downtown Raleigh Alliance, on the turnover for restaurants and retail downtown. It's been a challenging time for any small business owner to operate. And finally, a big number, 6. That's how many Wake County eateries received a health code inspection score of 89 or lower during the months of December and January. The lowest score, an 83, was given to Mi Rancho Mexican Restaurant, located at 2549 South Saunders Street in Raleigh. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline: Law should change to attack affordability crisis. One of the most recent reports from the National Association of Realtors caught me by surprise. In the Raleigh MSA, the overall affordability quotient for housing dropped to 0.8 by the end of 2021. The report notes a quotient of 1 is the ideal condition in terms of affordability. What's worse is the affordability for blacks is now at 0.5. In Durham, the affordability for blacks is at 0.4. Nationally, whites are at 0.8 and blacks are at 0.6, making Raleigh among one of the worst areas for a section of our minorities when it comes to home ownership. As one would expect, Austin, Texas, and some areas in California have worse quotients than the Raleigh and Durham areas. But almost everyone agrees we should not be comparing ourselves with cities and regions that are struggling with affordability issues. We should look at our own policies and laws to determine what needs to be changed, replaced, or even tweaked to address the housing affordability issues head-on and watch the bad numbers reverse their course. Leaders of our municipalities are quick to point out they cannot force private developers to build affordable units and tie up the development approval process until their wishes are met. It's called inclusionary zoning, and it is illegal in the state. In other words, the government cannot demand it, but if private developers offer affordable units as part of their master plan to get the zoning approved, it's okay. We have wink-wink policy here. However, if municipalities own their own land and they choose a developer to build housing units, the government can set up as many affordable units as it wants, but then private developers need to review their business model to see if it makes economic sense to contract with the city or town. If North Carolina allowed inclusionary zoning, municipalities could work with developers to chart a comprehensive plan for every piece of development around the city that would include workforce housing and even rent-controlled apartments, similar to ones in New York City and Montgomery County, Maryland. They're called home rule states, states that give local governments complete authority, have their own local charters or basic laws that describe the structure, powers, procedures, and services of the municipality. In North Carolina, private developers are sure to balk at such a change because it most certainly would affect the operating margins of projects. Financing could then become an issue. Maybe that's where the U.S. Housing and Urban Development needs to step in and make some of these projects viable by offering financial breaks through tax credits, reduced rates, and demographic assistance. This is a delicate issue. The town of Chapel Hill already has been sued for charging fees for affordable housing. The town may have the authority to offer incentives, but does not have the authority to charge fees. Wake County and other counties are making efforts to address the issue of affordability, but they're simply not able to move fast enough. And things will get worse. We will be left with an economically divided community. Short of lawmakers changing the state law, the only other option would be for local governments to buy as much land as possible around town so they can structure their own plans of attack. But is that what we want our cities to spend taxpayer dollars on? There is a better option. It starts with North Carolina. And in our remaining minutes, we'll read as much of this last story as we can, written by Evan Hoopfer. The headline, Plan for New Raleigh-Fayetteville Rail Line Being Evaluated. To relieve increasing congestion on Interstate 40 and U.S. Route 401, Fayetteville city leaders are considering the possibility of a commuter rail line that would connect the city with Raleigh. In January, the Fayetteville City Council supported Phase 2 of a study that will evaluate the feasibility of a passenger rail line between two of the state's largest cities. The study is trying to look at the two passenger railway corridors between Fayetteville and Raleigh, says Hank Graham, executive director of the Fayetteville Area Metropolitan Planning Organization. The western corridor would run through Lillington, Fuquay-Varina, and the western half of Garner before reaching Raleigh. The eastern corridor goes through Dunn, Benson, Selma, Smithfield, and then takes a sharp left turn going toward Clayton before hitting Raleigh. One of the biggest differences between the two routes is travel time. The western corridor contains more turns, meaning the train could only reach speeds of around 25 miles per hour on most parts of the track. The eastern corridor, however, contains more straight lines. The train can reach speeds of up to 70 to 79 miles per hour for large portions of the journey, the study says. Graham says the time difference between the two options is about 45 minutes to 90 minutes for the eastern corridor and between 90 minutes to 2 hours for the western corridor. The capital costs of getting each line ready for passenger service differ too. Projected costs for the western corridor would be around $131 million, compared with between $169 million to $175 million for the eastern corridor. The study also says projected ridership would be 13% higher on the eastern corridor. Phase 2 will develop more fine-tuned cost estimates for each corridor. Graham says Phase 2 will eventually pick a preferred route for the rail service. And we'll stop there as we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.